Welcome to today's episode of Fire in the Belly. This is where we get to hear some pretty inspiring stories from some amazing people. You know, it's always an absolute pleasure to sit down, take time out, and have a warts and all conversation about their journey. I'm always intrigued by what it's taken for people to get to where they are today. And hopefully, in this interview, we get to hear some more about that. From this, my mission is to help people to find their own fire in their belly, and from that, to live the mightiest version of you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's guest. Success is a process, not an event. Good morning and welcome to Fire in the Belly. Today we have myself, Mighty Pete, and we're joined by the Cara Macklin. Good morning.
Good morning, Pete. How are you?
Awesome, awesome. Listen, thank you for coming on. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
That's great. So tell us, Cara, who are you? What are you doing? Where are you from?
So I'm from originally a small town in Northern Ireland called Randallstown. I live in Belfast now, and my name is obviously Cara Macklin. I'm an entrepreneur and visionary success coach now. And my background, and no doubt we'll get into, is I grew up in my family business in Northern Ireland, working in a hotel and care homes. And I was a director of that business for 15 years before I left to set up my own business last year.
So there's a lot of evolution going on for you then, a lot of change and new business, exciting times.
It's been great, yes. I think my middle name is Change. If you've seen all the hairstyles I've had all over the years, Pete. Yes, I constantly, from I was no age, like change, growth, development, on to the next thing. I suppose it's a typical entrepreneurial mindset.
Would you would classify yourself as an entrepreneur? Do that blood beats inside you, does it?
It does. I mean, that word is thrown around probably a bit too much, but I think there's a certain profile of people. And so I would say entrepreneurial profile. I can see all the traits, good and bad, I have to say, in terms of, you know, on to the next thing, big ideas, get bored easily, you know, the day-to-day sameness isn't what we like. And as you have rightly said, change, you know, we're constantly looking, or I am, you know, what's next for myself, my business, my clients. So that would be in my DNA, definitely. And growing up in a family business, I suppose it was probably inevitable.
Just out of curiosity, I mean, do you like to solve a problem, or do you like to come up with something completely new?
Completely new.
Really? Okay. Where does that come from? You're very definitive there.
When I look back, you know, even as a child, I always had a crazy imagination, or very big imagination. I would be creative in the sense of arty, and I loved fashion design and did a lot of stuff in that as well. And in a business sense, I just, you know, it's like the Seth Godin purple cow stuff. I just always feel that if you can create something completely different, it stands out. So that's where my passion in terms of creative thinking for business comes in. Now, there is a process in that. It's not just sit in your room and come up with this idea and it happens. But yes, if you gave me the choice, creating something that no one has ever thought about before, that's really where my heart lies. Now, it's easy to think of it. It's not easy to create it. And I suppose it's as well, I love putting three things together that are completely different, that shouldn't be together, that make something else new. So it's, you know, if I use the analogy of baking, which I love as well, you know, it's like putting, you know, if I don't know whether you know Heston Blumenthal, who's a chef and a chemist. So people think he's very creative and wacky, but actually he's very scientific, you know. So I remember when I worked in London and Marks and Spencer's 15 years ago or more, when he wasn't heard of, he was in a meeting with us talking about bacon and egg ice cream, you know. And I'm going, well, initially I was going, this guy is crazy. But actually, that's what I mean about putting two things together that are not meant to be together. And it was, you know, he did a lot of that stuff that was absolutely gorgeous and very successful, but he knew how to put the right things together to create something a bit off the wall. So I suppose that's a part of it as well.
Oh, wow. That's like a whole new mix, a whole new set of ideas. Mm. Is it the newness of it, or the creativity of it, or what is it that sets you off?
Oh, God, that's a great question. Oh, the creativity I love, but I probably, you know, I remember as a teenager, God love my mother, we went to buy clothes that, you probably know growing up in Northern Ireland, that when you're that age, everyone needs to look the same, and you all wore Adidas. And I mean, I hated looking the same as everyone else, like absolutely hated it. So the part of being a bit different, and that would be part of it as well, that you can stand, sorry, not you personally can stand out, but I just think in the world that there's people are trying to be clones of each other to fit in, and I understand as a teenager why we do that, because we're trying to make friends and fit in, but I just think, you know, I wish more people were comfortable being themselves and just being who they really are, and that we could celebrate that, you know, we know human beings are different, so why do we try, all of us, to put them into a system and keep them all the same? So there's a part of that as well.
It's interesting to always to stand out. I mean, is it something, have you always wanted to stand out or just be that little bit different or change? Where does that all come from?
I probably always knew I was a bit different. I mean, I remember in school, secondary school, girls of my age talking about, oh, when we're in our 20s, we're going to be married, we're going to have a house in the country, and we're going to have so many children. And I remember thinking to myself, that's absolutely not what I want in my 20s. You know, so I always had, you know, I'm totally country bumpkin and I'm very Northern Irish, but I always had a, you know, an understanding when I look back now that I was slightly different. And yes, I suppose there's an element of I love more than anything making a positive change on things, in business, on people, and in society and the world. So that's what gets one of my fires going, definitely.
Awesome. Tell me, what does Fire in the Belly mean to you then?
Interesting, because I thought of this question actually last night. I think there's two sides actually to Fire in the Belly in terms of positive and negative. So fire in the belly in a positive sense. I mean, you and I talked about this before we came on air. I believe, like you do, everyone has it. It's just a lot of people either haven't found it, don't believe they have it, or it's been put out for some reason, very often by other people, actually. And for me, it's just, you know, it's, as I said, I love the name because I know it's in me. It's just like, it's a drive and something that nearly, I don't mean controls you, but has a massive power over you in terms of, you know, I know that I can't, you know, people say to me, oh, Cara, you need to slow down, or you need to, I actually just cannot do it, in the sense that, you know, my friends always say to me, oh, Cara, you know, once you're off on one crazy thing and you've got that up and running and it's going easy, you know, you hand it over and jump off the cliff onto the next crazy thing that you put yourself through. I can't do it any other way. And I've tried, and I, you know, it's harder. So that's it in the positive sense. And I think, you know, I say it's like fire in a room, as in your living room. It's the warmth and drive, you know, that you can have a positive impact in the world. The negative bit of it is the more you have it, you have to be careful, because it can burn you out, or it can kill things. You know, you can use it in a way that is not positive for you or for other people. So I think you just have to be careful how you use it, and make sure you've got the right things that are fire in the belly for you, that are a positive for you, as opposed to negative.
It was interesting now you say that, because I was actually listening to something this morning, and like Jim Quick, and he was talking there about, you know, it's not that, and I'm probably going to butcher this wording, but it was, you know, it's not that you're too busy, it's just you're not doing enough of what you love.
Yes, I'd agree with him. Yeah.
Which is interesting, you know, in terms of that, you know, if you're doing what you love, then it's just a completely different energy. Does that make sense?
Yes, no, massively. But, you know, I do think people look at this and think, oh, that person has got fire in the belly and that person doesn't. You know, I believe that changes throughout life and through things we're doing. Like, I mean, you're in business as I am. There's things that we have to do to our business to survive that do not give us fire in the belly. You know, we don't all wake up every day with this amazing roaring fire that's positive. You know, we all go through the ups and downs, and so I don't believe it's a certain people are given it as a gift and they have it through their whole life. I haven't met anybody that hasn't had it and not had it, and, you know, done things that they wouldn't do. So I think that's a bit of a myth that people think.
It's always, it is interesting. I don't know whether it's a, I mean, for you, is it a stage of life where you eventually get to the stage that, you know, you have to go through this journey and you have to come to this point? I mean, are you where you're supposed to be now is maybe a better question to ask.
So I asked me that second part again.
Are you where you're supposed to be now?
For this moment, I am where I'm supposed to be. I reflect back on the highs and lows and things that happen in life. And I, you know, it's probably easy to say when you're very comfortable and sitting back and relaxed and looking at it, it doesn't always feel like that at the time. But I truly believe we are always at a point in our life where we're meant to be, even the bad stuff. And I say that's not easy when you're in the middle of it. But I do believe that every point in our journey is where we're meant to be at that time.
It is funny, isn't it, that we have to go through that, you know, every experience is, well, is a learning one, I assume, you know, to bring it forward. Has that been the case for you?
It has been. And I think every experience, you know, gives you so much to learn. And as I say, when you're going through the negative, it doesn't feel like that, but there's a huge amount to reflect back on. The other part I would say, which people are not good at doing, is taking the learning from the positives. You know, people, when they achieve things, they just move on to the next thing. And I, you know, when I work with people, I get them to reflect back on what can they take from the positives. And it's the importance for me about that is straight away people are like, oh, no, I don't want to do that, because people very often think it's being arrogant or, you know, praising themselves too much for a job they've done well or what they've achieved. Actually, from my point of view, there's two sides to it. One is, if you don't understand how you achieved what you achieved, how are you going to do it again? So that's more important to learn from than the negative. And actually, you know, I use the analogy, we're all very good at beating ourselves up and being negative, you know, and that's like, I think I've used the analogy before, you might've heard me, that it's like a very slow dripping poison going into your system. And no one ever, you know, praises themselves for doing a job well done. So it's like eating good food and bad food. As you're putting the negative thoughts in, you're just drip feeding rubbish food into your body, and you're not putting the leafy green veg in and the water and the so there's two reasons people should do that. But I do, sorry, I've gone completely off tangent. I can't remember your original question.
No, just in I'm supposing in terms of, you know, what I'm, you know, it's where people are actually, you know, where you're at now, you know, where you're supposed to be, and that journey and the lessons that you learn on the way through. You know, it's interesting, you say, reflecting on the positive. So It's all well and good, you know, I mean, although we're success achieving mechanisms and such, you know, it's actually, you know, I think it's very true that you actually got to pick up on your wins. And is that gratitude, or what would you summarize that as?
Well, definitely is gratitude as well. But you know, it's so important to feed your own soul with gratitude and how well you've done. But setting aside that, if you don't believe in that stuff, which is scientific and it works, as you know better than me, but on a practical level, you know, if I said to you, Pete, okay, you know, achieved this year and that was really good, how did you do it? Unless you reflect, you can't tell me how you did it. So you're not going to be able to do it next year. So, you know, there's a practical, how do I replicate this? Sports people do it.
Mm. That's very, very true. Mm. So tell us, I mean, what stage are you at in now? I mean, you've launched the business, and where did that come from, and what was the idea behind it?
Yes, so I launched my new business, Karen, in July this year in the middle of a pandemic. Sure, why would you do anything else? As you know, I suppose my background of where it came from, which no doubt we'll get into, as I grew up in the family business and 15 years there of hospitality and healthcare. So I had that side of it. In 2017, I trained professionally as a coach, business coach, and that was very much my style of leadership has always been the stronger I am at getting the potential out of you, the more successful you will be, and as a team, the more successful we will be. So I mean, I was 24 managing a nursing home of 120 staff, and I've no medical background, so I had to figure out very quickly, how do I get the best out of these people, because that's the only way this is going to survive. And I've just, from that, I've always had a massive passion. I mean, don't get me wrong, a business has to succeed more than anything, because if it doesn't succeed, none of us are going to be there. But I love, you know, alongside that, I just love, you know, and even my teams when I worked in the business, my family business, you know, staff who and leaders who never believed they could do something. And I worked with them, and like 6 weeks later, they're doing it. I mean, that is just the most phenomenal feeling. So when I went to do the coaching, it was just to strengthen my ability as a leader, and I really fell in love with it. And I suppose there was two sides to it. One, you know, one of the things I bring to the table is I know I can get the best out of people. And outside, in my passion is creating really big change in the world. And I thought, you know, with my business experiences, I believe there's a lot of people who I could help on a business side and on their own personal side as an entrepreneur who are scaling their business. And it's really people who want to make massive changes in the world in a positive sense. They want to scale their business. They want to grow their business. So if I, you know, if I worked with 20 of those people and I can accelerate their success, look at the impact that I can then have in the world. So it's a bit like if I can do that through them, I can have a wider impact on the world than if I just did it solely on my own in my own business. So that's where the coaching has come from as well, and the launch of this new business.
I mean, who's your sort of perfect client? I mean, who is it something that you can really sort of do the most for, if that makes sense?
Yes. So my experience in business has been scaling businesses. So I went into a business with about 200 employees, and over the 15 years we scaled it to 700 employees and from three businesses to seven. So that's that type of person who have been in business a number of years. They understand the highs and lows of being an entrepreneur, and they are now at a point where either one or two things. One, they want to take their business to a completely different level in size, so that has an impact. Or they want to either disrupt an industry or do something very different. I disrupted the healthcare industry a number of years ago. But their drive is they are, you know, a change maker. You know, someone once called me a creative disruptor. So they have to have that fire in terms of, you know, very high level thinking, and they want to have a massive impact. And they want someone alongside them who has both the mindset stuff and the business mentoring that can help combine those two to get them there quicker. So that's my ideal client.
Love it. And where, I mean, your own sort of creativity, do you tend to, when you're sitting working with people, do you see something in them? I mean, is it working with them? I mean, what's your sort of preferred method to sort of beat it out of them as such in the nicest possible way?
Yes. Well, I'm going to pick up first on the creativity piece, and then I'll go into the second part of the question. People are listening, you know, if people are listening to this, a lot of people say to me, well, I'm not creative, Cara. And I say, okay, who are the most creative people you know? And they say, children. And I said, okay, if children are creative, we were all children, we are all creative. What happens in life then is we all have great imaginations as children. We go into school, and I'm saying this actually, before I say this, I want to say I had a very, very good education and schooling system. So I'm not knocking the teachers or anything else, it's a system. So we go into school and it's very linear. There's right and wrong answers. And of course, our imagination goes off. I mean, if we're staring out the window daydreaming, we're told off. And the person at the front of the room, who's the hierarchy, gives us the right answer. That goes into university. We then go into work in the corporate world, and the same thing is happening, still happening, unfortunately. And you know, people have phenomenal ideas. The problem is, as they go through life, it's like any creativity is a muscle and a skill. And actually, there's just, you know, a process behind it. If you're not using it, you lose it. So by the time you get into the work, it's like we're sheep and we just follow this person who's now the teacher or the headmaster, who's called the CEO. They tell us what to do. They give us the right answer and we go off and do it. Now, where my passion comes from is that worked okay 30 years ago in business, because business was a lot simpler. It didn't move as quickly. Unless as a leader, and I truly, truly believe this, which is why I launched this business as well. For me, the most successful leaders in the future are going to be the leaders who have the ability to think creatively. And not only that, they have the ability to get their teams to think creatively. The world is going so quickly. Disruption, I mean, I don't need to talk about disruption this year. There is not, I mean, I would argue there's not any leader in business, I don't care whether it's Richard Branson or who it is, that knows all the answers. So, you know, for me, that is now the most important skill that a leader should have, entrepreneurs should have, not only in themselves, but the ability to get it out of their teams. And that's what I do with them. I mean, I work with clients and I do a lot of different things, but the part for me is the mindset to come up with different ideas, different options. How do you make that happen? And the other part is the success mindset. You know, if you've got fire in your belly and you want to make a huge impact in the world, you need a certain mindset. I mean, I know you used a different word in terms of the mindset that the guys you work with, but that is training as well. You know, it's like an elite athlete physically, unless you're embedding disciplines, you know, into your life or your mind, you're not going to be an elite athlete and be able to make the changes that you want to make. So that's where I combine the two together to do that.
Where would we see Cara in her sort of most natural and sort of high performance form? Where is your hotspot?
Interesting question. I suppose when I can come at the junction of entrepreneurship and business and creativity, you know, and I have time. So if I give you an example, it might explain it better. So I was very lucky to get a scholarship to do an MBA in London a few years ago. And having said, I haven't done my degree and said I would never go back to education. It was the world of work for me. That was an interesting one. At the end of that, I came up with an idea that I wanted to disrupt the elderly care market in Northern Ireland and came up with the concept of a lifestyle care home. And that's the first, you know, it's a completely new concept, certainly in Northern Ireland, but I believe in Ireland. And that's where the sweet spot is for me. How do I combine, you know, a business expertise and look at something and flip it on its head and do something very different? So I looked at that project and thought, okay, one of the things that's very upsetting for me in that environment is a lot of grandchildren don't go as much to nursing homes because, let's be honest, people don't think it's the best environment for young children to be in. And I think there's a huge loss for society, both for the elderly person and the grandchildren, you know, that they're not spending as much time as they would if they were in their own home. So I thought, okay, what if I viewed this project through the lens of a six-year-old child? So we viewed it through that lens, and we viewed it obviously through the lens of an elderly person. And we and my team, I mean, I didn't do this on my own. I used a process with my team and they came up with amazing ideas. So if I give you an example of what's in the home, so we have a cafe in it, a bar in it, a cinema, a spa, a hairdresser's and a nail bar. And the whole concept around it is a life of fulfillment. So you come here at 96 and your life is more fulfilled and more energized. You know, you want to see fire in the belly, you go there and see the elderly people in that nursing home and what they're doing and the, you know, the new life they've got. I mean, one daughter said, "Mommy's now got a new life." So that for me was a, you know, that's probably the juncture for me in terms of being able to create something. And it's the impact you can see on people's lives as well. The staff are just, you know, buzzing and the residents and their families and the kids. And it's amazing.
I love that sort of that mixing of ideas, and it's quite a common theme for you. And three is a common theme. You know, you sort of a three-way junction and, you know, three things together and the Heston Blumenthal and things like that, which is quite a curious method of thinking. Does that make sense?
I hadn't even realized the three until you've highlighted there. Yeah. But I do, you know, that mixture of things together. You know, I always say there's not too many times in our lifetime. I mean, Steve Jobs was the man who created it completely from scratch. Most things in life are taking what we've already got and just mixing it into a new formula. You know, so people think creativity and innovation is, oh, you have to do like a Steve Jobs and do something at that level. No, it goes right throughout a business. You know, okay, I'm giving you a very big example of a business I created, but I mean, my teams are creating, you know, that mindset the whole way throughout the business. So like this year, for example, if I had had a bigger team, and I obviously my business is very small at the minute, but I would have had teams together going, okay guys, how do we mix this and this to create Zoom calls better? How do we mix this and this to create so it's an everyday process to just solve simple problems in a business. It's not just necessarily, well, how do we completely disrupt this market and turn it on its head? It's a whole process of continuous thinking, doing things differently. And it is, you know, it's combined. And it's, you know, one of the techniques I teach people is if you stay in the same environment, read the same books, surround yourself with the same people. You know, we all know this, it's groupthink. You know, so I purposefully mix with different people. I purposefully bring different people onto my team. Two people working with me. One is a law student who has no experience whatsoever at business. Now, I didn't pick him because he was a law student and he was different, obviously. I picked him because he was very capable and talented. But the other part for me is he brings something different to the table. And I would say to him, look, I want you, and some of the ideas that he has come up with and ways of looking at things are completely different to the way I do it. And what the other person that works with me is a marketing person who's in business, and he has come up with some amazing ideas because he just sees it differently. So that's an important part for me as well.
It is, isn't it? Sort of, it doesn't have to be earth-shatteringly different either. It can just be something, mixing ideas, new flavors, just different way of doing the same thing, right?
Yeah, well, he's gone through my social media and doing a bit of work for me in terms of research, and he came up with 5 or 6 headings, strap lines for, what we should be writing, a bit like Fire in the Belly. You know, people think, well, that's dead easy to think of. You know, those simple things take a lot of time and work, as you know. And he has come up with a few blinders in terms of words to use, or, 3 letters of a strap line, or the way we should be designing social media. And I mean, if you did the traditional route as a leader, I have one person who's doing back end stuff and admin, which is him. And I have another person who, in inverted commas, is the creative in marketing, who is a marketing graduate. So he would never, in a traditional business, be asked those questions. Hmm. But he's, as I said earlier on, he was a child. He's a good imagination. He's great ideas. And he turned it on its head for both of us, and gave some brilliant suggestions that we would never have come up with on our own.
Isn't it great? And that's fair play to you. I mean, that's a reflection that actually you can empower those around you and be open enough thinking to sort of, I mean, do you seek counsel in others? Is that a common thing for you? Is something you like to do?
Do I
seek counsel? I mean, do you,
go and get advice from others? Mm. Yes, I have a number of mentors. But as you and I talked about earlier on, you just be careful you don't have too many. But all my life I've had coaching, mentors, and I look for people in different, I'm working with some people in America at the minute, not mentors, but just in different groups I'm in for that reason. Northern Ireland, there's some people who've been very close to me for years and just have helped me along the way. And yeah, it's massively accelerated my journey. I say to them all the time, without them, I would never, ever have moved on. I mean, I'll give you an example, actually, something very simple. So, and I'm going to write a social media about this, but I'll give you the exclusive. So I've been trying to run 5K for literally years, and anybody sporty on this podcast will be like, oh, that's dead easy. And I, as Chris Tarrant said, it's always easy when you know the answer or how to do it. I've had knee injuries and different things my whole life and was told I shouldn't be running. Anyway, back at it this year, couldn't get there. And I was out walking in the park and kept bumping into the same guy who goes to my gym. And he, didn't give out to me, but he said I was fit enough and I should be running, and it was all between my ears. So I told him the story about my knee injury and whatnot, and he said, look, I will take you out and you will run 5K. So I kind of thought, that's the universe or God, if you're spiritual, sending me a message on a silver platter. So we went out 3 weeks ago, and to say it was a disaster is not an exaggeration, Pete. We finished the 5K, but it certainly wasn't done the first time or in one go. And last Saturday morning, he texted me on Friday and he said, Cara, can we meet at 9 instead of 9:30? 9:30 is when the park run starts. And I said, oh yeah, of course. I thought it was because he had something else on Saturday. And we went out on Saturday, and I'm very happy to say I did my 5K. If you had seen me, I was like a child of Christmas at the end of it, jumping up and down. People thought I was crazy. And we went for a coffee afterwards to celebrate. And I said to him, oh, have you a busy day? Because we started at 9. And he said, no, we started at 9 because it was quieter. And I wanted to give you more freedom of the park and not have to worry about bumping into people, so that you could concentrate on getting the 5K. So that's what a mentor does. They think of the, all I was thinking about was, have I got the right gear on? Do I put gloves on? Is it cold outside? What do I eat this morning? Have I drank enough water? Have I slept enough? He was able to think at a different level of things. And obviously the 9 o'clock, was it important to me finishing the 5K? Who knows? But that's what a mentor brings, or a coach brings, to the table. They look at it and think of things at a different level to what, because you can only think of a certain amount of things, and your mind, once it fills up, that's it. So that for me is a very simple example of, for me personally, why it's so important to me to have these people around me.
Well, that sort of it is always the cobbler's kid sometimes, and ourselves, we're great at giving the advice, and I hold my hands up to that. I mean, I can sit with people and do some, you know, amazing things and see it in them, and yet people going, what about you? It's like, yes. So we all need our moments, right? We need someone to hold the mirror for us. I do believe that.
Yes, and I do think we, you know, I don't need a huge amount of encouragement, to be honest. You probably can tell I'm fairly self-sufficient and independent, but every so often, you know, as I was running with Colin, he, you know, in the second run, he said to me at a point, at this point in the last run, Cara, we had stopped 4 times. So he, you know, he knew I didn't need fluff or a lot of, you know, you're doing a great job, or because that wouldn't work for me, but that was enough, you know, that one sentence to say, you've progressed a lot. And that for me, that fuels you to keep going and on to the next level.
Take us right back. Talk to us about Mini Cara.
Mini Cara. I suppose I look back to my earliest memory. People often ask me this, and I remember starting primary school. I went to primary school a year early because we had a reception class. And I remember arriving and thinking, I mean, there was people clinging onto their mum and people crying, and I remember thinking, what's wrong with these people? This is a whole new adventure. I mean, I couldn't wait to, I mean, I love people, hence why I do my job. I love, you know, like you do, people's stories, getting to know them, meeting new people. So yeah, I couldn't wait to get started. I always say people talk about being at school and being a rebel and doing all these things, and then, I mean, I wasn't. I was a complete geek, studied hard. And just, you know, I enjoyed school. As I said earlier on, I was very creative. So I made jewellery. I think my first business was at like 8 years old, making jewellery and selling it to my mum's friends. So I suppose it was always there. And I always have an interest in, if I didn't enjoy entrepreneurship in the business, I probably fashion design or, you know, some of the careers I wanted to do when I was younger. One was an air hostess, so that's where I love travelling. A pastry chef at a very, very high level. You know, you're talking about Michelin star stuff here, which I didn't think was going to quite work in Northern Ireland, certainly in the 1980s. Fashion design, hat design I did, so all that kind of stuff. And then the, you know, the more serious school I loved. Was I sporty? As I said, not particularly. I loved netball, but wasn't natural at it. And well, I mean, I suppose when I asked people, I was always outgoing. I mean, my mother reminds me of a story when we went to Scotland on holidays, and or even in those days when you went to the local shop and you were, you know, you could stay in the car as your mother ran into the shop. My mother would come out, and from 4 or 5 years of age, I had the window down and I was like kind of holding court and chatting to everyone. So I certainly always loved people and interacting with them, and that went throughout my childhood and probably still does.
It's great to see this. It was obviously, well, what seems to be an early confidence there. I mean, was it, you're quite outgoing?
Yes, I was. I would be socially confident. I could, with people, I would, you know, I wouldn't say I'm confident in everything, and I don't believe anybody is, actually. I think you learn techniques, but I, yes, with people, I don't see, you know, and I think it's interesting in business now, I don't do hierarchies at all. I don't do titles. People to me are all people, and we're all on the same level. We are human beings. Now, I understand there are people, in inverted commas, at a higher level in terms of a structure in a business, or there's people who, but to me, everyone's the same. And the key thing is finding something in common with people and being able to have a proper conversation and being, you know, just being genuinely interested in people. I mean, my upbringing was in healthcare and hospitality, so it's not rocket science. Don't go into those businesses unless you have a real genuine interest in people.
You talked to there's multiple careers there. I mean, did you know, and that those sort of early jobs and ideas, I mean, what was the big plan then? So fashion seemed to be there, fashion creativity was sort of a mix up between the two as to what was going to happen for you?
No, I mean, from I was no age, my dream was always to work in my parents' business and be a director and run it. From as long as I can remember. The other things, you know, were a hobby and a passion, and I enjoyed them, but it was always the Macklin Group. And I say my first business at 8, my second business my brother and I had at 15. So we used to run buses to local nightclubs. We lived in the countryside, so I always say now, I believe it was a very important community service. You couldn't get out. So I tell the story. So the bus cost us £100, and we had 52 seats on the bus. So my brother and I obviously had to go free, and the other 50 seats we charged a fiver each. So we made £150 profit 5 or 6 times a year. So that was quite a nice tidy sum at 15. So that was my first business with my brother. So I love creating things, making things. I mean, I remember I was recommended at one point in my life to go and work for a bigger organization, and I did look at one job, and a headhunter spoke to me about it, and thank God for my own sake. I mean, we talk about the times in life of things, you know, at the time they didn't even take me for an interview, and I was a bit like, oh God, you know, what's wrong? It was thankfully the best decision ever. I mean, when I look back now, I creating things and working for myself and making something bigger was always what I wanted to do.
It's always fascinating, you know, and talking to people about what's the best thing that didn't happen. And that's that's like a great story where you know, at the time it was maybe a little bit hard and a bit lumpy to swallow, but, you know, reflection is an amazing thing really, isn't it?
Yes.
You know? So going through school then, what were your standout subjects? What were your strengths?
I loved maths. I loved languages as well. I mean, again, I say I was complete different. You know, people were either science and very medicine orientated, or finance to accountancy, or languages and went on to do something else. But anyway, so my A-levels, I ended up doing maths, French and home economics. I loved home economics because, again, you were the ability to create something or... But that was a big mixture in terms of A-level subjects.
That's a fascinating range, as you say. I mean, it doesn't follow the logical of, you know, logic brains or lingual brains or anything like that. It's a very curious version. Does that make sense? So those three subjects, they're quite different. I mean, to have, you know, mathematics, the logical, the, you know, the binary, that side, and then to go the other side, you know, just there's quite a diverse range, really. Is that, where does that all come from? Do you know?
No, I don't know. I mean, I often thought about that. And actually, I would have loved to have done economics as well. Business studies didn't come into my school until 2 years after I left. That would have been a first choice. But of course, you can only, when I did my levels, you could only do three, which... again, is not a good thing for an entrepreneur. As you know, we want to do everything like yesterday. I don't know. I mean, interestingly enough, I hated science. I quite liked physics, hated chemistry, but loved maths. And I loved languages, but didn't like English or English lit. So I have absolutely no idea. And how my brain or mind works, it's obviously there's things from both sides. Maybe the languages was tied into the air hostess. Maybe that was another way that I knew I was gonna travel. I don't know.
Oh wow! So what was the plan then? What did you come out? You came out of school, and mm-hmm. what direction did you head?
Plan was business studies, and you know, to go into the Macklin Group ultimately and run it. So I did a business degree, a food business degree actually, in University of Ulster. I would be very well, I'm a real foodie as well. So I suppose the mixture of you can be very creative and scientific in that world. And I did business studies, and I worked, as I said, a year, and I got a very lucky to get a job in Marks and Spencer's head office in London. So I headed off at 20 on my own to the Big Smoke. Knew nobody, thinking, oh, well, it's only an hour and a flight. Now that was, I can tell you, one hell of a culture shock 18 years ago. It was like an Englishman in New York song. I remember getting the doors of Marks and Spencer's and didn't even know, like I couldn't even get in. The building was so big. I'm like, how do I get into this building? I don't think I spoke. I mean, you said to me earlier on, I've confidence socially. I don't think I spoke for 8 weeks. And that was actually, when I look back now, that was my mindset of, oh, well, you come into this big organization and people who are more senior than you know what to do, and they tell you what to do and you do it. So even without being in a corporate world, I had that in my mind, which is just awful. And I remember my boss, who was just phenomenal to me, her first few weeks, she said to me, look, we've brought you in here because you've got fresh ideas and fresh thinking and we want to hear them. And I mean, she actually, it's probably only coming to me now, but when I look back at what she did for me, that was a seed being sown as well, in terms of, you know, the importance of how you get the best out of other people in terms of their ideas. So I stayed there a year. I worked in an amazing department called the Food Trend Studio. So our job was to tell Marks and Spencer's food people, product developers, what are the trends coming in the future, and also to benchmark best practice in the all over the world. So we benchmarked our food against the best chefs in the world, not against other retailers. You know, so I would have been working with, I remember someone said, Cara, you're so lucky, you're going to be working with the best chefs in the UK here. And in the late 90s, early 2000s, famous chefs were in Ready, Steady, Cook. I don't know whether you remember that program. So I was meeting all these guys like Heston Blumenthal, who no one had heard of, Mark Hicks from the IB, Mark Edwards from Nobu. And when you're 19 or 20 coming from Northern Ireland, these guys are not famous. So I thought the English people were taking the hand out of the Northern Irish young student, because I was one of the only, there's only three of us from Northern Ireland there. And I remember then opening the Times. I had to go through the media articles. I remember opening the Times one Monday morning. And again, that would not have been a paper that you would read in the countryside in Northern Ireland at 20. And the middle page spread of it was the top 20 most influential chefs in the UK at the minute. And 15 of them I had worked with. So, I mean, you talk about giving someone that age, you know, my background, that experience, it was just amazing. I was so lucky. So that was the start of the whole creativity, the, you know, business, how you bring it together, how you benchmark best practice to create something very different. So the process starts then. I graduated from Jordanstown, came back to the family business. So I did everything. I mean, 24 was my first job, managing a nursing home of 120 staff. I then set up the first group purchasing in the group. So we saved a lot of money and put in a lot of really good, you know, systems in terms of our procurement and suppliers. We had no HR department when I was in the business originally, and we had 250 employees. So all HR issues landed on my desk. And I mean, you've an entrepreneur who wants to make changes quickly, don't give them the job of dealing with HR issues. So I very quickly figured out I wanted a HR team around me, and actually not to deal with the issues, but very much to foundation to grow the business. So I set up the HR department in the business. I opened three other businesses during my time there. And anybody that works in a family business will know that you do lots of things. I mean, I've done everything except the accounts. I'm not an accountant, although I did do accounts in one of the businesses, but you're operational. You work on Christmas Day, serving in the hotel, you know, strategic stuff, buying new businesses, opening, how we grow. So I was involved in all of that. And then, as I said, in 2015, I got a scholarship to do an MBA in London. So back, I headed to the Big Smoke. And that was very much, I wanted international experience, and I got a scholarship, which was lovely. And I wanted the experience of different industries and to learn, you know, a lot more. Again, I think we've talked about this earlier, Pete, it's the Northern Irish thing. I went to the Big Smoke again thinking, oh, all these big high flyers, and you know, so your confidence then, you're thinking all these finance guys and they're out of the stock market in the City of London, and what would this country bumpkin from Northern Ireland know? And you go there and you realise actually you know quite a bit, and you can hold your own the very best. So that was a huge part, you know, a huge step in my journey in terms of, you know, seeing different things and meeting. I mean, I think there was 38 countries in my class from all over the world. So, I mean, just a phenomenal experience personally, a phenomenal experience business-wise. I mean, I got to work with the Doyle Hotel Groups there, an international hotel group. Now I got to do a project with them when I was in London. You know, again, their CEO, who is just a phenomenal, he's been in the industry forever. And I mean, he was very much, look, Cara, I want you and the guys working with you on your team to come in and give us ideas and tell us what we could do better. And, you know, so that's the piece for me. When I meet, you know, the most successful business leaders, they have that mindset. They know, you know, they want input. They want other people's point of view. Sorry, the right people's point of view. I don't mean they just ask anybody, but they're always hungry and looking for the next thing and the next idea. And they're very humble in that. I mean, he said to me, Cara, like, my background is finance. You have the expertise in different things, so I want to hear. And very much, they took a lot of our ideas on board, which was amazing. came back then to the family business and launched the lifestyle care home, as I said, and we opened that in 2017. 2018. And, you know, everyone said, when you do any disruption, people will know it is phenomenally difficult. And when you go into an industry that is highly regulated, airlines, healthcare, rightly so, it is a lot more difficult because you're dealing with people's lives. And so everyone said, it'll never work. You're in a part of Northern Ireland. We're a countryside. We're not in the city, you know, and all the analogies that go with that. And I knew it would work because I had a phenomenal team of people around me. The staff were just outstanding. We launched it in May and we filled it in November. So the proof was in the pudding. And then now onto my own business. So I now obviously work with other big thinking entrepreneurs who want to make big changes in themselves and their own business and achieve huge success.
Is it the change, is it the implementation, is it the design and that side of it that really sort of floats your boat? I mean, when it becomes to business as usual, is that the time to get you out of there?
Yes. No, don't bring me in if you want, you know, someone to, you know, and you need people, let's be blunt honest, you need people who can do the business as usual because that's where the success and the finance and that, no, definitely not. I mean, I'm hungry for what do we do next? How do we improve? And there's a time and a place for that. And there's definitely not, you know, you cannot keep doing that level of change and development and growth constantly. So you need to keep moving me. Otherwise I create too much havoc. So, you know, it's a bit like the fire in the belly stuff. I know where I work well. And I know, I mean, there's certain meetings I knew not to go to because the staff, you know, we would have had all our staff involved, care assistants, everything. And the speed that I go at and the speed they go at is different, rightly so. Thank God they're very patient because they work with dementia patients. So I would know I need to give them more time to think about things. And, you know, you can probably tell in this call, I have a huge energy. And because I'm an extrovert, you can see it. And if I'm very passionate about something, that energy can overwhelm some people, you know, and it might take them a bit longer to get there. So when I know that's happening, I just don't go to certain meetings. So I'll say to my nurse manager, look, you're going to take this meeting for this reason, this reason, this reason. And then she knows the other way when she needs energy injected in something, she'll bring me into a meeting with her. So it's, you know, it's being very, very clear about yourself and it's where you enjoy. I mean, I'll get frustrated sitting in a meeting or in a project that's not moving quick enough. So it's being clear about what you bring to the table and where you can succeed and equally as well, where is not the best environment for you. You know, I use the analogy of the sunflower and the daffodil. You read the back of the packet when you buy those seeds and it tells you what to do to get the best and to grow the tallest. You need to do that with human beings as well. And people say to me, how do you do that? I said, it's very simple. You ask them, all my team who work with me, the first, you know, I have a number of questions that I ask them, even the students and everything, you know, what can I do to get the best out of you? Where have you been in an environment before that you've thrived? What does that look like? What would I do that would be detrimental to you? Or where have you been in an environment that has not got the best out of you? Or you felt frustrated? Or you felt like you weren't given your best or reaching your potential? And when you're able to decipher both of those sides of the coin, well, then obviously you do the things that help them grow and be their best and don't do the other things. It's not rocket science.
It is. I mean, where that sort of understand that it's not rocket science, you know, for you, obviously you're, do you see things? I mean, or do you feel it in terms of when you get struck by an idea or vision or what you could do is that a picture you form or what way does it come?
It starts as a picture and then it's people thought I was crazy. I mean, I'm just keeping back to the lifestyle care home because that's been the most recent and biggest. No, I can physically see it. As if I'm looking at you now, I can see, like I could see the staff, what uniforms they were wearing. Now, at the very, very beginning, the picture's not as clear. And the more you go through the process, it becomes clearer and clearer. But and I suppose that ties to the fire in your belly. The minute I can see that and then I feel it and I'm like, oh my God, this is just going to have the most unbelievable impact on people. So every time, and there was a hell of a lot of no's along the journey, I just kept going back to that because I was like, no, but this is bigger than the no's that you people are telling me. So everything I've done in my life, it's that, you know, the power of visualization, and I'm sure you know it, Pete, I don't need to tell you, but, you know, it is scientific. It pulls you forward. And I suppose that ties back to, you know, when you asked me about being a child, I always had that. I mean, I remember at 14 years old sitting in home economics. I don't know what, there were probably more of a science element that day in class. And I was daydreaming. And literally, I remember thinking, at university, I am going to get my placement in Marks and Spencer's in London. Because, I mean, Marks and Spencer's when we were children was like, oh my God, like once a year if you were lucky. I always just, you know, simple, really good quality food is what I'm very passionate about. So all the rubbish that we're putting in the food now, it scares the life out of me actually for society. And Marks and Spencer's actually, I didn't realise until I went to work, originally started as a family business. There's a lot of values that would match mine. And then I got the job then years later. So
what are your core values?
Freedom is one. Growth is definitely another one. Creativity and you know, doing things differently would be one. Ambition with humility is probably the best way to say it. I love people who are very ambitious and have huge passion, but with a level of humility. I can't be coping with, as I said earlier on, hierarchy, titles, arrogance. We were all, you know, there's some people, yes, have a higher IQ than others, granted, but we were all given those things. So there's nothing to be arrogant about. And just openness or trust, there's a, you know, huge part for me around probably open, you know, just people who are very honest and open about how they do things. I mean, I'll share all my knowledge. It's, you know, I've been given it and I've learned it. So like, it's the best feeling in the world to be able to give it to someone else. So I love other people who do that as well.
Are you able to unleash yourself? I mean, do you have to hold back? I mean, you talked about those sort of when you're in an energetic form and, you know, not everyone can cope with that. Does that happen a lot? You've got to be mindful of where you sort of unleash your creativity or sort of the environment you're in.
I have to be very careful of the environment I'm in, yes. I mean, I've been in environments in the past that were not conducive to me. So, and yes, when you say, do I have to hold back massively in those environments? And I remember doing a bit of work with a guy around, you know, my profile. And I mean, it's a scientific tool that I'm trained in, predictive index. It's phenomenal. That was another turning point in my life. And he was able to tell me from the work he did with that, the impact it was having on my energy. He said, you're adapting so much that it's draining so much of your energy. So people automatically assume that when you work hard and you're driving forward and, you know, with energy, that that's what burns you out. Actually, people like that, when you hold them back, it's like, you know, I give the analogy, it's like a Formula One car with 90 mile an hour accelerator on and the brakes on at the same time. They burn out if you don't give them. So, you know, you need to give me space, freedom. So that's why I know I have to run my own business, because in a big corporate world, you can't always get that. So yes, I'm more aware, but I, you know, as difficult as it was at the time, and probably did drain my energy to the point where it made me sick in my 20s. It was a good thing looking back, because I now know the type of environments that I should not be in and where I should be.
How's ego for you?
Oh, cannot be coping with ego. Have you read the book Ego is the Enemy?
No, I haven't actually.
Ryan Holiday, it's a brilliant book. Actually, a lot of his books are really great. I was introduced to it this year. Ego is a very dangerous thing. And you know, people say there's a fine line between confidence and ego. There is and there isn't. And, you know, I always say no human being should be given too much power. And not that I'm into politics, but American White House ex-president now is a perfect example. I believe we all, you know, we survive with each other. We, you know, that's where this year has been so devastating. Human beings need other human beings. And we all need a bit of a trip up in our life and a bit of a bump in the road, and to keep us, you know, because success, you know, you look at, you know, they talk all the time about successful teams in rugby and football. The managers who take over the next successful team are very worried. I mean, look, after Alex Ferguson left, what happened? Because it's human nature. The more success you have, it's very hard. But I mean, you and I can say this, Pete, the great thing about living in Northern Ireland is you don't get too above your station too quickly, which is great. And you know, we're humble in this part of the world, and I have very, very close friends. I mean, yes, I love business. Yes, I love doing things, but I mean, can I unleash? I mean, I am the biggest child outside of business. I mean, I love trampoline parks. I love nature. I love, like, I was in the, went for a walk recently on the beach in Ballycastle, and I like went into the water, like up to my knees, because I, you know, so I'm such a child. So, and no, ego is not, ego doesn't do it for me at all.
What age do you see yourself as?
Ask that question again, sorry.
What age do you see yourself as, or do you feel you are?
Oh, good question. I'm very lucky. In one hand, people look at me and think I'm younger than I am. So people think I'm in my early 30s is what they tell me. When I was younger, people told me I had a head way above my years and mine. So what age do I see myself as? Probably younger than I am in one hand. But in another hand, I can see that there's, you know, a lot of forward thinking and things I want to do. So I probably don't think too much about age, to be honest. I mean, I was another interesting story about running. When I did my 5K, I passed three ladies in the park running together, holding each other. And my mentor, Colin, as I said, he told me that the lady in the middle is 92 running. So, I mean, I don't think age is important. I mean, I spent a lot of my life with elderly people, and you know, they are very, a lot of them are very young at heart. And I know people who are 19 who are very old at heart. So.
Absolutely. What are you capable of?
Oh, God, that's a... I believe I'm capable of anything I put my mind to. If I want it badly enough. I believe I can achieve anything I put my mind to. That's probably the best way to answer that question.
And in terms, I mean, for, do you future pace? Do you set big goals, long-term goals? What's your sort of strategy on the upside, if you like?
Yes. So again, I'm going to use the running analogy. I visualize a lot in the future, and I think entrepreneurs, our biggest skill is that. Our challenge is we're here now and we see the end result, but I think it's a protection mechanism, actually. We don't see the bit in the middle, and that keeps us going because that's the painful bit. So having made a, you know, it was a very big decision for me to leave the family business, because that was my forever after, and I left a few years ago. And I'm actually, I don't mean I'm slowing down in terms of what I want to achieve, but I'm kind of realigning, and I'm just taking a bit more time to think about what is the bigger picture for me right now. For next year, it's, well, I want to travel again and see friends and work with people internationally and grow Karen as a business. So I have targets around that, and that's going to open up for me. I have some ideas longer term what I'd like to do as well. I mean, I want, there's other business ideas that I want to do in the future, but I'm just, you know, learning from past experiences where I'm taking a bit more time to just breathe and step back and look at all my experience and what I've done in the past, and what would I really love to do next, as well. And continue to run. Maybe I'll get the 10K next year.
Love it. It's always good. I mean, you know, I suppose pushing yourself, there's always, I get that sense that it's always there. You know, you're almost curious of your own capabilities. Is that a fair?
Yes, it's a blessing and an absolute curse. Again, one of the guys who did that predictive index with me, the guy Paul, he's a car, just to let you know the way you work, he said every day has to be an achievement for you. And I was like, oh, thank God, somebody that finally understands me. I wake up in the morning and I say it is a blessing and a curse. It's just, what's next? What's next? What can I achieve? Where can I impact now? I'm looking at your logo, the fire in the belly. It cannot be put out. So I'm very, very blessed to have it, but, you know, I have to be careful how I use it. And you know, let's be honest, you cannot run at a 90 mile an hour Formula One car. So I mean, I use that analogy with myself now, because when people tell me to slow down, I really don't like it. So I think to myself now, okay, that's the best analogy for me, because in inverted commas, the slowing down is, you know, Lewis Hamilton, I need to come into the pit lane.
refuel, get the tires checked. So that's my slowing down, the take me. Because if I don't do that, then I'm not going to be able to go back out and perform and race at that level. So that's the best way I can get around the slowing down analogy.
It's good too, though. I mean, if you have that passion and that thing, it's like, yeah, telling someone to do less is kind of, you know, the most pointless thing you can say to them. It's like, yeah, that's just really not going to work for me. You know, like, it's best that we just end the conversation and move on. You know, do you have different people for different things? I suppose, whether you creativity or operations side, I mean, do you find that it's easier just for you to bounce between people for different sectors or different strengths?
I bring different people into my teams, you know, based on their strengths, their values, what they'll bring to the table. I have different mentors, you know, like I have one mentor, she's called a millionaire online mentor. So she has helped me a lot this year. I wanted to scale my business internationally. So her, you know, and mentor is very much, you pick, as you know, the person who has got the experience in it. It's very different from a coach. My other mentor, he, you know, has 40 years experience in business. So he brings a very different perspective to it. In terms of creativity, I find if I do group things, so I'll do art classes, I'll do, you know, just to take your mind to a different level. And that's, you know, when your mind is relaxed, which is another technique, that is when you come up with your best ideas. You know, you do not come up with them when you're running around. I mean, we all talk about out for a walk, in the shower, when we're just about to go to sleep. You know, there's a scientific reason for that. You're accessing your subconscious mind and you're allowing, you know, thoughts. So I proactively, and I haven't been as good this year now, to be honest, with everything that's gone on, but I try to build in things that I enjoy, that take me to that space. I'm also, and I've stopped this year, but I need to get back to it, started to learn to play the saxophone. So actually that's a vision for next year. I really need to get that back up and running, be able to play a few tunes on it. And then, yes, you know, let's be honest, if there's certain things, very specific, operational, or if I had a business, you know, I don't know, in hospitality, again, or restaurants, I mean, you go to the people who have the experience, who've done it before for certain tactical things. So,
what, I mean, working with different people, what do you find generally is the biggest or the main block for a lot of people?
Themselves is the biggest block.
Why?
They're scared, you know, the imposter syndrome is powerful. They've been told, you know, a lot of people, you and I love personal development. I have experienced a lot of people who love personal development, had a good experience at school, or they had a very bad experience at school and they're going to prove their teachers wrong. But you do find, or I have found, sorry, a lot of people who don't like coming into this world have had a terrible experience at school. Told they're stupid, told they can't do this, blah, 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 whatever, which is awful. You know, society, conventions, trying to fit in, you know, and I'm not, that is a positive thing. Human beings need to be connected. We all need to feel part of something. You know, it's why people wear football shirts. It's why as a company we have logos. And that is very important for humanity and our own being. The problem is we create molds and then people fit into it. You know, and it's like you said to me, you know, I get frustrated when I'm held back. You know, I would say, and having talked to some of my mentors, I would say 80, 90% of people are doing either jobs or things that are not their purpose or not what they should be doing or not what's making them happy. And that is actually very sad. Can you, you know, I often say, I mean, if there was a big higher power of what I would love to do in my life, imagine the whole world and every single human being waking up every day with fire in their belly. Because they love what they're doing, they're on purpose, they're earning enough money to take care of their family, and they just, I mean, my God, if you and I were able to achieve that, Pete, in our lifetime together, would, like...
I even, just selfishly, it's not even selfish for myself, I just, it blows my mind what I'm capable of. You know, it's like, I call it like the popcorn effect. It's like sometimes you just sit back and grab a bag of popcorn, it's going, this is interesting what you're saying. It's like out of my own mouth, it's like, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
But you say, I mean, to unlock that in people, and I get a very polarized view. I'm lucky to talk to a lot of people successful, you know, and then for whatever reason, whatever way you define success. But you also sort of do get a slightly polarized view that realize that this is a sort of a niche section of the population.
Well, I have another mad idea, Pete, which is to build a school in Northern Ireland. And that school would involve a lot of the stuff you and I are talking about now. This is where the challenge comes in. How do I operationally do that? Nightmare, no idea. And how do I fund it? No idea. So that's two big problems that anybody would say to me, well, good luck with that idea. But I just imagine in my head a school where the school is molded around the children. Their best. And, you know, again, it's nothing to do with education because teachers are in a system where they have to get grades for pupils. The government is setting these standards. That's what schools have to do. But that, you know, to me, that is not the way that it should come from. It should come the other way around. And every child, I would have a school full of like dozens and dozens of sports. It would not be one sport for one school. Every child would love a sport because it's so important for your mental well-being, which I found out later in life. And we would send children and young people out into the world believing that they could achieve and do anything they wanted. So that, I mean, how I'm going to do that, no idea, but that's a crazy off the wall idea that I just, and actually we would create it in Northern Ireland and people from all over the world would look at it and go, my God, that is a centre of excellence.
I get it. And it does make sense. You know, there's so much there that I love your thinking. That's the first thing I would actually say, you know, that, you know, it's the school is critical, but actually the method can be changed, you know. And there's so many people go, oh, the system's this, the system's that, and all the rest, and almost to disassociate themselves from it, you know. So, no, I totally believe in you. I think it's just a case of, it's not even the how, it's just when, you know, and what. You know, that's the key thing. And why not? We all need that. You know, and Northern Ireland is great for that. Yeah, people keep grounded, but also it's that sort of creativity and that sort of going, well, we'll keep you grounded, but go on ahead.
There's great people here, great entrepreneurs, people who do it, get on with it. Great thinking as well. So,
I love it. I love it. What's a non-guilty pleasure for you then?
Oh, non-guilty pleasure. I eat too much chocolate. That's one of them.
What's your go-to in chocolate?
Is it a guilty pleasure? My other dream, and I'm not sure how I'm going to do it or if I'll do it. I'm going to say I'm not sure how I'm going to do it. My ultimate dream personally is to get on Strictly Come Dancing. I would literally like do anything legal to get on that program. That would be where I would be in heaven.
As a dancer, I assume, not just in the audience.
No, as a contestant, yes.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Why not?
That's what I think. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a great way of looking at it, you know, and putting it out there.
If I say it enough times, someone might hear it.
That's it. Well, I mean, and that's, it's so, so key even in saying that, you know, it's like not always the road to success is not always a straight one. You know, it's like when you have a success in one part of the business, well, then that, you know, actually opens the door to another part because you kind of go, well, we want you because of something else, you know. So, and that it's a common thing I find, you know, as well with Fire in the Belly. It's like when you find your passion, the rest of the universe will bend around to make it happen for you, you know, and it is that, you know, but just focus on your niche, focus on what you do and do well, you know. Tell us, I mean, just being respectful of your time, I mean, really, in one or two words, what's your Fire in the Belly?
Creating meaningful change in the world.
That's not two words, but that's okay.
I know.
It's amazing. Nobody actually listens to the two words. I love it. Creating meaningful change. I love it. I love it.
So tell us, you did say the power of three, so I suppose unconsciously it's stuck.
Well, that's actually five, but yeah. Well, again, yeah.
Meaningful change. We'll go with three then.
I love it. I love it. Tell us, where can people hunt you down, track you, follow you, stalk you?
Yes. So my website is karam.org.uk, and what I'll do actually for your listeners, I have a webinar. If they go on to karam.org.uk/fire-in-the-belly. They can access a free webinar, which isn't on the website, but I'll do that for your guys in terms of listening. And I'm on LinkedIn as well, Cara Macklin. Feel free. And I'd be delighted if anybody wants to reach out, message me, ask me any questions. As I say, the more we share with each other and knowledge and journeys and lessons we've learned, the more powerful it is for everybody. So I'd be delighted to hear from anybody and be able to help in any way that I can. And again, thank you so much for reaching out and inviting me on. It's been brilliant.
No worries. Final thought?
Anything's possible for everybody. Nice. I'm on the same page as you.
Yara, thank you.
Thank you very much, Pete.
Well, that was another great episode of Fire in the Belly. You know, this really wouldn't be possible without our great guests taking the time to share their personal journeys. And boy, oh boy, sometimes it is personal. It's an absolute pleasure to have that, and then to hear the journeys that people have been on. We've loads more episodes coming up soon, and it's always a pleasure to have guests on. If you do happen to know anyone with true fire in their belly, please reach out to us so we can share their journey, lessons and successes. So, all that's left to say is have a great day, live with fire in your belly, and be the mightiest version of you.